From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
If I want something done right, no, I don't do it myself, or at least I don't do it myself without doing a little homework first, and often reading up or calling or emailing for help. Over the years, numerous such queries have headed across the Hudson River in the direction of today's guest, or into the pages of one of his many books for an appropriate tidbit of wisdom. At the moment, I'm pestering Lee Reich, who's a master at making compost, growing common and unusual fruit, pruning, and much more, for any tricks of the trade about growing from seed, because it's that time again. Lee, author of A Northeast Gardener's Year and The Pruning Book and Weedless Gardening, Uncommon Fruits for Every Garden, Landscaping with Fruit, and Grow Fruit Naturally, may not have written a book about starting things from seed, but he's a really great vegetable gardener, and I'm so pleased to welcome him back to the program to help me, or to help us, get started on our best seed starting and vegetable gardening season ever. So welcome, Lee. How are you?
I'm good.
Happy non-winter.
Really?
What the heck is going on?
it could still happen.
I know. It's wacky, though. It really is wacky.
I'm ready for spring, though.
Yeah, I know. I feel like we've had spring about three times already.
Yeah.
So I have to ask, have you ordered all your seed?
I have. I try to get them all ordered, actually, before the end of the year.
You're so good.
I do that so people can say that.
And, oh, you just do it for the praise. Okay, pat you
right
on the back. So, did you order anything that you've never grown before, or do you have, like, tried and true standards that you always order? Or tell me a little bit about the kinds of things that are in your shopping cart.
Well, mostly as far as seeds, I have to say, I don't want to sound provincial, but as far as vegetables, you know, I've tried so many different things and had so many duds.
Yeah.
That I stick with mostly tried and true. I'm looking through a list. I made a quick list of some of the interesting things I was ordering, but most of them were all of them, except for one is things I've grown before.
The only new thing is
it's not all that exciting. It's a Walla Walla sweet Spanish onions.
Oh, that's interesting. I saw that on the rack the other day in the garden center. I think it was a high mowing packet. In the local garden center, and I thought, can I really grow Walla Walla onion? I didn't know that. You know, it kind of confused me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I thought the same thing. And also, this is sort of weird because it says Walla Walla sweet Spanish. Oh, wait, maybe I read across the column too much. It is Walla Walla.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supposed to grow okay, I guess.
So you're trying that one. Have you started any onions yet? I'm about to. I haven't done it yet.
Of course.
Oh, Lee, you always make me feel so substandard.
February 1st is my onion sowing date.
Okay. All right.
No, actually, I got to admit, I did it February 2nd.
Okay. So, well, I'm going to do it about the 6th, I think. So,
right. It doesn't really matter the exact date, because the amount of growth that mine will make was germination and growth between the 1st and the 6th. Is not going to be significant at all.
Okay. So you ordered only one thing that you hadn't tried before, and it was a Walla Walla onion. And so what are the sort of standbys that you always find yourself having?
Well, like for beans, I always grow Blue Lake beans.
Uh-huh.
And then usually I grow Kentucky Wonder or
mm-hmm.
Romano also.
Me too. I love Romano. Mm-hmm.
They're just only the ones that I think are really the most worth growing. I actually started growing watermelons a few years ago, and I grow this one variety, Blacktail Mountain.
Blacktail Mountain watermelon?
Yeah, huh. It does pretty well in the north. I mean, I've had good crops from it, and it has unbelievable flavor. And one of my favorite things, it's seeded. You know, in the supermarket now, you get, or in even farmers markets, everybody only sells seedless watermelons. I really like the seeded ones.
Huh, interesting. And not because you save the seed, but because you just like that as a characteristic of eating watermelon, spitting out the
seeds.
Well,
first of all, I like eating the seeds.
Yeah. Oh, you do?
As I eat the watermelon. And also, maybe, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, whenever they breed something specifically that's not flavor-related, maybe the flavor got bred out of seedless ones, but that might not be true. That might be my imagination.
Right. You might be linking two things that might not be linked.
Right.
But we can look into it.
But it is a great tasting watermelon. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. And tomato-wise, do you have favorite tomatoes?
Oh, I got a lot of favorite tomatoes. And mm-hmm. that's one thing I don't do. People are always trying to give me tomato plants or tomato seeds. Last year, I succumbed to it. Usually, I don't. I've had so many mediocre or even good tomatoes, but there's no reason to grow a good tomato when you can grow a great tomato.
And so name a couple of great ones.
So Sun Gold for cherry tomatoes.
Me too, absolutely.
I mean, it's definitely far and away the best.
Yep.
Then just for the other ones, I mean, they're nothing new, the ones that most everyone grows. You know, Cherokee Purple, Brandywine,
yeah.
Belgian Giant. One that, you know, people often for paste tomatoes, they grow Roma because it's sort of synonymous with paste tomato.
What's it called?
Roma.
Oh, Roma. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't grow Roma. I grow Juliet, which is a sort of a grape cluster that I use
I've grown
paste.
That.
Yeah, it's really highly...
Roma is one of the worst tasting tomatoes.
I totally... You see, I really agree with you. I don't grow it. I don't bother.
So what I grow mostly for paste, so that I make, sauce out of just about all my tomatoes. I don't separate them out.
Right.
But San Marzano really does make quite a unique one. And that's the one in cans in Italy. They specify that San Marzano.
Right.
And then two other tomatoes that I highly recommend that they're both really good for paste and really good for fresh eating are Anna Russian and Amish paste.
What was the first one?
Anna Russian.
Okay. And then Amish paste is another one. A beauty. That's a beauty, yeah. Oh, okay, good. So...
And then, the other ones, nothing, you know, pretty much it's interesting. Most people agree on, you know, what the best tasting tomatoes are, you know, like Brandywine, all those,
mm-hmm.
and they are.
so you told me the one new thing you're growing, and you tell me you've started your onions. Have you started anything else yet? And I should say, you and I are both in the Northeast, and it's, you know, February. So have you started anything else?
Well, I started celery this time. And this year, last year, I hadn't planted in a really long time, celeriac.
Uh-huh.
And so I started that at the same time. Last year was really a bust because I had it in a place in the garden that wasn't getting enough sun. I think some mice got at it. So this year I'm going to really give it better conditions. And I did start those seeds. The celery, interesting. Interestingly, I grow them in the greenhouse, some celery for winter.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes to seed starting in spring through summer. And then I let a couple of plants just set seed. And I don't really have to start the seedlings anymore because now I got seedlings all over of various ages sprouting up all over the place in the greenhouse.
Cool.
So basically, I just weed out the extra, transplant what I want outside, and leave some in the greenhouse. Oh, and the variety I grow that I've been most successful with, in the past I was never successful, but I've grown this for many years, is Ventura.
Ventura?
Yeah, like Jesse Ventura.
Yeah, Ventura, okay. Because I was going to ask you, because I'm seeing it in the farmer's market, and I'm seeing it in my local food, my organic food co-op, I'm seeing locally grown celery in season more than I did, say, 5 years ago, and I never knew what variety, and some of them are kind of not so, the stalks don't seem to get really big, but this is a good one, Ventura.
Yeah.
Okay, Ventura. And for those of us who don't have the advantage of self-sown seedlings to enjoy, to grow on, when you would have started it early, around the time of your onions?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, they take a long, they germinate slowly, then they start growing really slowly. And with celery, you know, especially it's nice to, I mean, it's good for them to have just a smooth transition so that they're just the right size when it's time to plant them out.
And what is that? Like, how big is that? Is it like a 10-week plant or a 12-week plant or a 6-week plant? Or?
I'm looking it up in my book quickly.
Oh.
It's 12 weeks.
12 weeks. Okay, so it's sort of more like an onion-ish thing or a leek-ish thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Okay,
I also sow leeks.
Okay. Any favorite there?
No, I've tried a few varieties. I mean, they're all good.
Okay.
Do good things and they last. And yeah, I still have a whole bunch of them in my basement. What I did is I harvested them and I put them in, pack them in a box, like a wooden box, and then pack dirt around it and keep it moist. And my basement's quite cool.
Right.
And they keep really well.
Well, you know, one of the things that I find interesting about, I have seen your vegetable garden, and it's a no-till for many, 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 many years. It's a no-till. Is that the right many? Yeah, it's a no-till.
I think there's one more.
Oh, sorry. It's a no-till garden, which means you're very careful when you remove last year's plants not to make too much disruption and dislodge weed seeds and so forth. What stuff do you direct sow always versus start inside? What stuff do you always start inside? Are there some things you always direct sow? I mean, I figure beans, like you said, you grow blue
egg.
I always direct sow. Do you direct sow things like your watermelon, or do you do that inside?
Well, I start those inside just to give them, so I get them earlier in the season.
Okay.
But you know, that's one of my pet peeves, because people often think that, I think because they don't have faith in the seed, that they think they have to start them inside. Or in a pot where there's so many, you know, if you go to a lot of garden centers now, they sell beans, you know, in a six pack.
You know,
beans, squash. You don't have to do squash inside either. You can just plant the seed right outside.
Right.
Now most, you know, I store a lot of seedlings, but I direct sow a lot of stuff. I mean, you could direct sow onions too. In the onion black dirt region, you know, south of here, they're all direct sown.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's not something that I'll probably end up doing myself where I am in my raised beds. But
right.
Yeah. So you and I know, have used for many years, we were addicted to the APS, whatever it's called, propagating system. It was like, it's like a styrofoam cell pack that stands up on a platform. There's a water reservoir beneath it and a wicking mat, like a felt mat capillary mat that wicks up the water, so it's self-watering, etc. So you and I have both loved that. That doesn't exist anymore, but there's a new sort of generation of it that we're both going to try. But you also sow, to sort of keep a steady supply of seedlings coming, you also sow sometimes outside when we get a little later in the season, don't you? Don't you sow?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if this is what you mean by some stuff outside. Like, I'll sow lettuce very soon to eventually transplant outside.
Right.
but then also sow lettuce directly outside. But then actually through the gardening season, through the growing season, I'll sow lettuce and use that, use the APS or the GrowEase is the new one. Use either one of them to have seedlings. And the advantage of this is it makes much more efficient use of space, because you don't have to take up space. You know, I could put 24 seedlings on 2 square feet in this flat.
Right.
And if I put it in the garden, that'd take up a lot of space, where it's only 2 square feet in the flat, and then when the space opens up out in the garden, I can just pop these things in.
Right. So if some other crop comes out, you have these several week old lettuce seedlings or other such seedlings ready to plug into that space. So you always kind of, and I saw that you do this with kind of like small flats, like almost like what I'd call like a community pot, not very big, and you put a piece of glass over it and kind of get it going. Can you tell me a little bit about, do you know what I'm talking about? I've seen pictures of it.
Yeah, this is actually to get even more efficient use of space, because my greenhouse isn't that big.
Right.
And I raise a lot of seedlings. So even that 2 square feet for 24 plants, that's a lot of space. So what I do is I germinate things in a smaller flat, say 4 by 6 inches, and I could put like 5 rows or 4 rows of seedlings in mini furrows there.
Right.
Then it'll take a week, say, for the seedlings to come up, or maybe even 2 weeks. And then once they're big enough to transplant, when they have their first leaves, I can just very carefully lift them out and then put them into the APS, or the, you know, larger cells. Each plant gets a separate cell. You don't have to have that. Anything with a separate cell. And it just makes it, you know, so have that much more space in the greenhouse then.
Right, and you sort of
And you get more economical use of seed, because I'm sowing a furrow, 4 inches long, rather than, you know, having the garden, the same amount of seed might be for 10 feet.
Right, right. So I think that's one of the things with succession sowing that is really the trick. It's not just succession sowing as in every couple, 2 weeks, for instance, with lettuce, maybe right. go outside and sow some more lettuce. It's having backup lettuce in various life stages ready to plug in so you always have lettuce, yes? I mean...
Right, and another example of that would be, so I grow endive every fall.
Oh.
Because it really lasts a long time. It's really, this is the endive that makes a head like lettuce, but it's hardier.
Uh-huh.
And it's got a different taste. So I like to plant that out August 1st,
mm-hmm.
But if I was just going to sow the seed directly, I'd have to sow the seed, say, July 1st out in the garden, and maybe I don't have space then. So say if I'm growing corn, and the first crop of corn is out of the garden by, I sow it early in the spring, and the corn is in the garden till August 1st. But July 1st, in flats, in these, APS or some way in little seedling containers, I do the endive. So then the endive's growing in the flats through the month of July. The corn's in the garden till the end of July. When the corn comes out, I just put the endive right in. And
right.
I already got a month jump, and this way it'll head up by October.
Right. So you grow Brussels sprouts, don't you? I love to grow Brussels sprouts. Last year was my first failure ever with Brussels sprouts. We had a very dry year where I am, and I think I just didn't take good care of them. In the face of it all, I was kind of, throwing in the towel, as we say, most of the season mentally. Do you start Brussels sprouts earlier, or do you do them a little later than some of your other brassicas? Where do they fit in sort of your scheme, and how do you grow them?
Actually, the same time, March 1st, is all my brassicas, except for some Chinese cabbage. Chinese cabbages I would do then, too.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I didn't grow Brussels sprouts for years because I thought I didn't like them. And then 2 years ago, I thought, well, I'm making a challenge. See if I grow really good Brussels sprouts.
Mm-hmm.
So I did grow them. They're quite good. And then last year, I decided to really make them good. The way they sort of flap over and then they curl up, but you ruin all those sprouts at the bottom.
Yes.
So last year, this obviously isn't something you can do on a farm. Mm-hmm. But on the garden, you can do it, which is one nice thing about gardening. So I decided to stake them, and they looked so cool. Everybody that came to my garden thought this was the most awesome-looking thing. So by the end of the season, they had sprouts from top to bottom. They were standing straight up like soldiers, and they were about 5 feet high.
Wow, they're like trees, Brussels sprout trees.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
So you started them, and you had them indoors for about 6 weeks from March 1st date for your area. And so then mid-April, you were putting them out in the cool early spring.
Uh-huh.
And no other special treatment other than you staked them last year.
Well, just my usual soil. I have drip irrigation.
Right.
And I had, put an inch of compost down.
Right, right. But, I mean, there was no... Do you disbud them? Do you top the plants? What do you do, later in the season?
I did disbud them. I read this. I'm not sure it really does anything. I pinched out the tip September 1st. What happens, though, I'm going to do half of them this year to see if it really does something. Because when you pinch out the tip, it sort of releases side buds from being held back.
Right.
I pinched out the tip, and some of the sprouts that would have formed at the top grew out and start to grow into stalks again. Small stocks, but I'm going to try both ways this year.
It's a research project.
Right.
That's
three
good.
Three plants one way, three plants another way.
Well, right. And aren't you going to have if it's real science, don't you have to have another plot somewhere else, the control or something?
Well, the control will be the three plants. I won't do it.
Okay. Okay.
Really, I should have a few plots with randomized throughout so that there's not a spatial factor.
Well, you're the PhD, not me, so that's okay. So do you grow any flowers? That's one of the things, as I visualize your garden, I don't know inside the vegetable garden. Do you grow flowers in the vegetable garden?
I do. There's actually one flower that, once again, not to sound provincial, but there's two flowers that I always have been planting inside the vegetable garden.
Mm-hmm.
And one is one of my favorites for flowers, lemon gem marigold, the Signet marigold.
Yeah.
They're so nice. They have this ferny foliage and then these little yellow flowers that just sort of dotted like stars on the foliage, and they make these green mounds, and they're just really nice plants, and they make an edging, so I make an edging along the main path. And then the other flower I do is at near the gates. This was inspired by Monet's garden, is I plant nasturtiums, so they sort of soften up any over rigidity that my garden might have.
Do you use the nasturtiums as an edible? Like, do you add them to salads or use the flowers or anything like
that? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah. So you.
But they,
yeah.
But they grow so much that, you know, there's plenty to harvest into, unless I was going to get into some heavy harvesting.
But you use the sort of peppery leaves.
Actually, I use the flowers because they look nice, too.
Okay. Okay. So, no, that's. So what would you say is like the, and we maybe have like 3 more minutes or so, what do you think is like your sort of, you know, the plant, the vegetable that you're the best at growing, like you're a champion, fill in the blank? Because, I mean, you know, unusual fruit, I think of you as the unusual fruit guy, but like what's your vegetable strength, you know, what's your super strength?
That's a tough one.
Like, I think I'm a great, I have always grown beans. You mentioned beans before. I love pole beans. I'm crazy about putting up teepees, you know, big 10-foot bamboos,
yeah.
And like having crazy things growing up them and lots of productivity. And I love all that. I mean, so I don't think I could have a garden without beans, but I don't know about you. What do you think is your?
I think, you know, a lot of people would probably take issue with this, maybe you, but I consider fruits to be hard to grow generally, or you have to be. It's different. Vegetables, I feel like, are so easy that basically it's possible to grow everything really well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think what I don't grow well.
Well, maybe the celery was the example, because that's not something that everybody grows, and that's something that you figured out, yeah?
Well, it's not figured. They just like the rich soil, consistent moisture, starting right. At the right time. You know, it's not. Although last year, I'd say my celery was a failure.
It was?
Yeah.
Did you have a dry season, too? Because that's, I mean, I had a lot of trouble with things because of the
dry. Well, I have drip irrigation, and they rotted for some reason.
Oh, interesting. Oh.
Yeah. Huh. So I guess the thing with vegetables is there's always some failures, but, you know, grow so many different vegetables that doesn't really matter. I mean, same thing with the fruits. If you grow a lot of different kinds of fruits, you know, you always get something.
Right.
Another benefit of home gardening.
Right. One of the things I forgot to ask you about, of course, is what you're using as a potting medium. You mix your own, don't you?
My secret mixture?
Oh, okay. I won't ask you then. Sorry.
No, it's all right. It's funny because before I came up with it, I did this many, many years ago. I did research this so intensively. I looked up every possible mixture, every possible reason for putting anything into a mixture. And then I came up with this thing that's sort of pretty straightforward. It's basically equal parts garden soil, compost, peat moss and perlite sifted together, and then for extra good measure, I often add a little kelp.
Oh, so wait, so you said...
Oh, and I also add some a source of extra nitrogen, like I'll put soybean meal or alfalfa meal in it.
Okay, so you said equal parts of soil, peat, perlite, and...
Compost.
Compost, okay. And then you're using some kelp and some maybe soybean or alfalfa meal as your nutrient.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, no, the nutrient, there's a lot of there's nutrients in the soil.
Yeah, but you're adding a little more.
Compost.
Yeah.
And I use that, you know, a lot of times people, you know, I grow a lot of fruits in pots, too, like tropical and subtropical, and people say, you know, what kind of potting mix you use. I basically use this exact same mix for everything, except if I'm growing cacti, I'll, you know, add extra perlite, and that's it.
So that is your seed starting mix as well as your container gardening, your potting mix.
Right, everything.
Oh, wow.
You know, I have trees in it, I have shrubs in it, I have, you know, figs in it, I have everything.
Wow. Okay. You know, that doesn't sound that hard to make, Lee. How come I never did that?
You never asked.
Okay, well, good that you finally told me. Good that I called you again across the river to Lee's house of botanical knowledge. I'm so glad to talk to you. Thank you so much for the advice on starting seeds, and I'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Yep, I hope so.
Okay, and I'll talk to all of you again soon, I hope too, like maybe next week. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. You can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or facebook.com/awaytogarden. And happy seed starting meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.